The resignation of Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel is bringing the administration's military and foreign policies into new light. The next secretary will have to deal with the lingering issues of pay and benefits reform, sequestration, the new technology offset strategy. Joining me with analysis, Jim Thomas, the Vice President and Director of Studies at the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Tom. Thanks for having me.
All right, let's start with Hagel himself. Give us an assessment of his tenure, which was relatively short. He presided over all this budget uncertainty, social change. How'd he do?
Chuck Hagel came in and was supposed to be a post-war Secretary of Defense, but the world obviously changed dramatically over the last 2 years since the time he was nominated. He had an almost impossible job trying to develop strategy amidst fiscal uncertainty and dealing with multiple overseas crises simultaneously. So I think that the jury's out. We'll have to see how a lot of these things play out. How will the budget play out? How will a number of crises, including in Syria and in Iraq, play out over the next few years?
Whoever might come next is going to certainly probably try to ponder why it was that Hagel left. From all we can tell, he did resign more than push out. Is that your assessment?
There's probably more to it. There's no defining moment like there was with Desert One, where Cyrus Vance resigned as Secretary of State, or there's no signal of a major policy shift as there was when Rumsfeld exited the Pentagon. So this appears a little different.
So, in other words, it may have really have been something mutual where each side agreed this isn't working out.
It appears to be. That's really just speculation.
Yeah, well, it doesn't matter, I guess, at this point. He's resigned. And what do we know about his day-to-day administration of the department? Because that affects a lot of the career workforce and the generals he deals with. Was he pretty good at that aspect of it?
Well, I think he had better working relations in the Pentagon, it seems, than he did with the White House. In particular, I think he had very strong relations with his Deputy Secretary, Bob Work, as well as with the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Marty Dempsey, General Marty Dempsey. And there, I think he actually formed, a very cohesive team with them.
Because that's in contrast to someone you just mentioned, say, Rumsfeld, who was great with the White House, but the generals couldn't stand him.
So I think that he was able to form this relationship. And I think the main thing about Hagel, I'd say, is that in a very Omar Bradley-like way, he's a guy who was an infantryman himself in Vietnam, and I think he always had the best interest of the troops in mind, and he seemed to have a genuine connection and loyalty and sense of obligation to serving the troops.
And this whole business of the battle or effort campaign against the ISIS group over there in Syria and Iraq, I mean, it looks like we're trying to say we're doing something, but really we're lobbing sort of spitballs in many ways, considering the frequency and intensity of what we're actually doing relative to other campaigns involving dropping bombs in the past.
I think that's an open question. Are we really pursuing a strategy that will ultimately lead to the destruction of ISIS? This may have been a bone of contention between the White House and the Pentagon. I'm not sure that goes away with Secretary Hagel's exit. I suspect that this is an issue that almost any successor to Chuck Hagel will also have to address.
But to address it, it would have to require a change in the policy of the administration, correct?
Yeah, it very well could. I think that there seems to be a mismatch between the strategic goals that have been set out in terms of ultimately destroying ISIS and the means as they're being applied today. And so one or the other, or both of those, probably have to change.
All right, so let's talk about some of the pressing issues the next secretary will have to deal with besides that. What do you think the top ones are, or is that the top one?
Well, dealing with ISIL certainly is up near the top of the list, but I would say so is the FY16 budget trying to get a budget out. You know, there's some very strong candidates to succeed Chuck Hagel, among them Bob Work, his deputy, obviously, and Ashton Carter, who has an incredibly strong background in defense, as well as Michelle Flournoy. And Michelle was a member of the National Defense Panel recently, which called for going back to the FY12 Gates-level budget. And repealing the Budget Control Act. And I think that's a goal that almost any incoming Secretary of Defense would share is how to get out from under the Budget Control Act in the next couple years. And so that's really got to be a top priority. I think the other is that WMD issues, in particular nuclear programs, have been on the back burner for quite some time. There was a failure to reach a deal with Iran yesterday. We're probably headed towards some sort of heightened tensions or crisis with Iran, and we have to be prepared for the next provocation cycle from North Korea.
Yeah, because some of the news reports say that the Iranian foreign minister screams at the top of his lungs at Secretary of State Kerry.
Yeah, that's right. It doesn't bode well. And the fact that the extension is for such an extended period of time doesn't really suggest that a deal is at all imminent.
And a couple of initiatives that have come up would seem to be ripe for important consideration from the next secretary, continuance. One is our own nuclear missile defense crisis, which Chuck Hagel recently announced an overhaul of, but it's really just an announcement more than getting deep at the situation there.
Yeah, over the past month, Secretary Hagel rolled out a couple really important initiatives, both in terms of nuclear stewardship as well as what he called just last week out at the Reagan Library, the Defense Innovation Initiative. And this is an idea of how the United States military might offset some of the anti-access and area denial challenges that are emerging around the world. My hunch would be that almost any incoming secretary would want to carry forward and, if anything, expand and intensify those efforts. I don't think that they would probably walk away from them.
We're speaking with Jim Thomas. He's vice president and director of studies at the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments. And that whole offset strategy in the long-range research and development program and some of the other elements of it, is that something that originated in the Pentagon or in the White House? Because it doesn't seem like the issue that would necessarily interest this particular White House.
Well, I think that it's a little of both. I mean, when the president obviously led with the direction to rebalance to the Asia-Pacific region, I think this influenced how the Pentagon thought about its role. I mean, rebalancing is about a lot more than just defense issues, obviously. It's about our economic relations and our political relationships and just the growing importance of Asia as a whole. But the security dimension is very important. And here we see that, as Secretary Hagel said, we can no longer take for granted our ability to project power anywhere in the world, especially in the face of sophisticated air defenses and other systems that could impede or hinder our ability to do so. And so we're having to think about not only new technologies, but new concepts and new ways of operating to overcome some of those problems so that we can maintain the credibility of our security commitments and we can maintain our ability to project power despite the efforts of potential adversaries and challengers around the world to contest that.
So that might require rethinking, for example, the way we build and use and the quantity of things like carriers?
It could, and in a lot of cases, it means maybe adapting how we think about using them. As countries are pursuing new anti-ship ballistic missiles and anti-ship cruise missiles, as well as pursuing advanced submarines, many elements of our force, including aircraft carriers, may have to change the ways in which they operate at greater range from the coastlines of potential adversaries. And so we have to think about how we will be able to execute operations at these longer ranges and be able to send aircraft into much more contested environments against much more sophisticated, advanced surface-to-air missile systems.
And another issue I wanted to talk to you about in a completely different vein, and that is the personnel costs of the military. It's something that the last three or four secretaries have brought up, but it never seems to get anywhere because you're dealing with people and claims and veterans groups and so forth. Is that going to be high on the agenda in the next couple of years, do you think, the personnel cost issue?
Yeah, I think absolutely, in the sense that this is another area where there's an awful lot of continuity between Chuck Hagel and his predecessors in terms of realizing that personnel costs are growing at an alarming rate. And at the same time, at balancing that against honoring commitments that the United States has made to service members and their families and veterans. And this obviously is going to be a political hot potato in Congress, but I think any secretary who cares not only about preserving today's readiness, but also preparing the United States for the challenges it's going to face in the future, has to do something to put a brake on personnel costs as we look ahead. And that's going to be probably holistic in terms of the number of personnel in the department, not only those military service members, but also civilians and contractors. And it involves not only things like compensation, but also benefits. So I think it has to be addressed in that respect. And I think it also is going to be tied to issues such as base realignment and closure. If the number of bases is coming down, it stands to reason the number of people comes down commensurate with that.
And I don't like to get into politics too much, but with the realignment and possibly having John McCain as head of the Senate Armed Services Committee, is it possible that because the Republicans will have the Senate and the House and the president has some things he needs to get done, that they might be able to almost provide political, I don't know, coverage or chiaroscuro, yin-yang for one another to get some of these tough issues done in the next couple of years?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I think we'll just have to wait and see. It's a little too early, and I don't think that the incoming leadership in the House and the Senate yet have really signaled where they're willing to go and where they want to lead.
Yeah, not a lot of kumbaya happening so far.
Not quite yet.
All right, Jim Thomas is Vice President and Director of Studies at the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.